Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, how's it going?
It's going well. It's been a busy week, I think, with the winter meetings. You know, some big splashes out there. I feel like it's a little bit busier than usual. You know, a lot of disappointed fans on the East Coast, especially. But it's all part of the being a fan aspect, I guess. So yeah, busy week. We got a lot to talk about reliever wise too. We're almost at the point where, you know, almost every closer is kind of off the board, or all the bigger name closers are off the board. So it's only been a week since we last talked, but a lot's happened.
Right. Usually I would take some time to talk about something off topic, but we've got so much to get to. And like you mentioned, we're recording just a week after our last podcast. Usually we go every other week in the off season. But the combination of my vacation next week combined with, as you mentioned, the winter meetings, there's just so much to talk about. We wouldn't even be able to fit this in if we had to wait another week. So we're going to jump right into it. And we have so much to talk about today. We both mentioned twice, the winter meetings happened this last week. During that, the Rule 5 draft occurred. There were plenty of free agent signings, one big trade. We had some injury and news and some rumors swirling about as well. And then after we get through all those things that have happened, all the news and stuff, we'll talk about our main topic and discuss some sleepers on the swing and miss side. So we'll look at guys that are good at getting whiffs, good at getting strikeouts, but maybe under the radar names for 2026. And we'll go through a decent list of those guys. But let's start with the Rule 5 draft. We'll run through this pretty quickly. If you're unfamiliar with the Rule 5 draft, it is a draft that occurs every offseason where teams have their pick of any player that is not on the 40-man roster that has been with their club for a certain number of years. It's like four or five. It's dependent on when that player was signed, how old they were
drafted. Yeah, for college guys who were drafted, I think it's 3 years. I think for high school or international guys, it's 4 years since being signed or drafted, or signed. Yeah.
So you get a lot of guys that maybe have sort of faded out or are blocked in their team, right? Guys that have been injured in the past. You also get a lot of relief pitchers, and that's because every player selected in the Rule 5 draft must remain on their team's major league roster lest they be returned back to the team from which they were drafted. So, for example, last year, Shane Smith was the first overall pick. He had to remain on the White Sox roster for the entirety of the season for them to keep him throughout the rest of his tenure on his contract. But if they had sent him to the minor leagues at any point in the season, he'd have to be returned to his former club. The Rule 5 draft isn't usually something that has a lot of fruit in it. It's not a very fruitful draft. But from time to time, as I mentioned, Shane Smith, there are some diamonds in the rough. Smith was an all-star last year. I mean, slim pickings on the White Sox, but it's certainly possible.
Red Sox have had pretty good luck. I mean, just as a Red Sox fan, seeing Garrett Whitlock a couple years ago, and then Justin Slayton too. So they've had some guys. It's really like a reliever and backup catcher draft almost.
Right.
If we're really being honest, I mean, Shane Smith is kind of an outlier for as far as like a starter of emerging. Mm-hmm. goes, but yeah, it's typically you're looking at, like, you know, guys who are a little bit older, have been hurt or just don't throw strikes, or, you know, whatever it is at the minor league level. And, you know, guys, teams take chances, they tweak something, and then they end up being a pretty good reliever. So hopefully, yeah, I think there's a couple names here that can be kind of impact relievers, maybe not this year, maybe more down the road, but there's some interesting names that were taken.
So let's jump right into it. The draft order is in reverse winning percentage order. So that means the Rockies had the first overall pick after having a terrible season last year, and they took RJ Pettitte. He was the Tigers' number 30 prospect. He's now the Rockies' number 26 prospect. And Pettitte's pretty interesting. He throws really hard. He's also like 6'8" and 300 pounds. Huge. So he's like enormous.
Yeah. I think he was at Arizona in the fall league last year or two. 1 year we were down there, he was there. I remember seeing him. He's just, yeah, enormous dude. Does touch 98 with his fastball. Slider sweeper, really good swing and miss potential as well. Yeah, I mean, he should get a chance. He should stick on that Rockies roster. No reason for him not to stick around for a year, and they can, you know, see what they can develop him into. Might be a starter down the road, but this year probably ends up in the bullpen. Probably not a closer right away, but I don't know. That bullpen is really wide open. So if he really, you know, takes off this spring, maybe he does carve a high leverage role out of a good spring training.
Sure. The White Sox took the next player. They took Jedickson Paez. He was the Red Sox number 19 prospect. He's now the White Sox number 15 prospect. These prospect rankings are according to MLB Pipeline. And then after the White Sox took Paez, the Nationals took Griff McGarry, who was an unranked prospect from the Phillies and is now the Nationals number 30 prospect. Do either of these guys interest you?
Paez, I think, will end up being more of a Paez. He doesn't throw hard. He's got, like, for a guy his age, I think he's 20, 21. He has like really good command. I think he's got 70 grade command on, I think Fangraphs gave him 70 grade, or one of the networks did. Really good command, but the stuff's just kind of mediocre. So he seems like more of a back end starter, middle relief, long reliever, unless he gets like a huge bump in velocity. McGarry, though, that's a guy who has been kind of hyped up as a potential reliever for the Phillies for a while. Just really bad command. Like we said, it's either command or health issues with most of these guys. McGarry, it's command mostly. But, you know, him going to Washington, obviously there's a wide open bullpen situation there. He does kind of have, you know, Stuff Plus loves him. He does have a little like of a Clayton Beater as like a comp is kind of not too far out of the realm of possibility there. So like kind of Clayton Beater light, just both guys, really good stuff, bad command. I think if the Nationals can figure it out with one of them, they'll have a high leverage guy, if not a closer, on their hands.
The next pick was the only position player taken, catcher Daniel Susak. That one was pretty surprising. I mean, we're not going to talk about it here, but he was a first round pick of the A's.
I know.
And then he was taken by the Twins and then was ultimately traded to the Giants. So he will likely be the team's backup catcher to Patrick Bailey. We'll see how that works out. The next player was also traded. The Pirates took Carter Baumler from the Orioles. He is an unranked prospect, but he does seem to have a pretty decent fastball, so maybe he figures things out with the Pirates.
Yeah, or the Rangers now that he was traded to the Rangers.
Right.
Yeah,
good call.
I know, and I was like, the Pirates, I don't know if he's got really a spot there, but Texas, I mean, that bullpen is obviously just, there's no real guarantees in that bullpen outside of Robert Garcia, so I think Baumler's got a chance to make that bullpen opening day. Yeah, really good fastball, touches 98, really good vertical break on it, flat vertical approach angle as well. Curve is a plus offering, just needs to stay healthy and limit walks. That's, you know, like most of these guys, really good stuff from a lot of these guys. Just stay healthy and limit walks and they'll find a spot.
The next player was also traded. Ryan Watson was taken by the A's from the Giants and then traded to the Red Sox. He's an unranked prospect. Nothing spectacular here. The Cardinals then took Matthew Pushard from the Marlins, and he is also an unranked prospect. Neither of these guys really stand out, but sounds like Pushard was pretty decent at AAA, and Watson at least had interest from multiple teams.
Yeah, Watson, the Red Sox, like I've talked about with Whitlock and Slayton, they've had some success in this, the Rule 5 draft as well. Although that success was with Heim Bloom making decisions, and the Cardinals and Heim Bloom did draft Matthew Pushard, who, again, the Cardinals bullpen's pretty open as well. I think there's room for him to make a case to be in that opening day bullpen. Good numbers at AAA for Miami last year, and, you know, fastball can touch 97. So it's a good base to build off of.
Right. Next, the Astros took a somewhat familiar name as they drafted Rodri Munoz from the Reds. He is an unranked prospect and really isn't a prospect anymore.
He doesn't have prospect eligibility. Right. Yeah.
He's thrown more than 90 innings in the major leagues and is likely to be more of a swingman. He was a starter throughout his time in the Braves, Nationals, and Marlins farm systems, though with the Cardinals last year, he did not start any games. But in his full-time transition to the bullpen, he displayed higher strikeout potential. So maybe there's something that the Astros saw there.
He's got two really good pitches, and he throws from the right, right-hand side. Astros need right-handed relief help. It's right now, it's what, De Los Santos, Caleb Ort, and Brian Abreu only. So, yeah, I mean, Munoz is the obviously the most major league-ready option of this group, being that he's got 93-plus innings at the major league level. And, yeah, I think his command's been, you know, an issue, but the he's got two really good pitches in his fastball-slider combo, so... Yeah, it's definitely worth the gamble for the Astros, who need cheap relief help. So, yeah, Munoz is a good flyer for them.
All right. Next, the Guardians took Peyton Pallett from the White Sox. He was the White Sox number 14 prospect. Now is the Guardians number 19 prospect. And the Blue Jays took Spencer Miles, who was an unranked prospect for the Giants and remains unranked in Toronto. Anything on Pallett and Miles?
Pallett, I don't think he cracks the rotation in Cleveland this year, but probably someone that they're, you know, thinking of being a potential rotation guy for them down the road. You know, good changeup, mid-90s fastball, good spin rates. Doesn't really profile as a reliever at this point. Miles has barely pitched. He missed 2025 and 2023 and threw 7.1 innings in both 2022 and 2024. Pitched in the fall league this year. I think we might have seen him at one point. I don't quite remember. But I guess he's got a pretty decent four pitch mix. So, you know, if he sticks around in Toronto, which that bullpen we know is pretty deep as is, I don't think it would be a really hard time for Miles to make it in that bullpen, but he'd be a long relief option for them.
Right. I think you can say the same about the next guy. The Yankees took Cade Winquest from the Cardinals, where he was unranked. Now he's the Yankees number 30 prospect. I don't see how he factors into this rotation or the bullpen. There's very deep bullpen. There's a very deep rotation here in New York. He does provide depth. So if they experience a ton of injuries in spring training, that's probably where Winquest lands on the Yankees roster. But other than that, I mean, he was solid last year at Double A, but not spectacular.
Yeah, and he's a bit, I think, I don't forget his age, but he's kind of, he's
25,
not.
He just got to Double A for the first time.
For a Double A guy, especially in that system.
Who
is kind of pitching starved. I don't see him really having a chance to make it in the Yankees bullpen. But yeah, like you said, if injuries happen, there's always a chance that he can sneak in and get a long relief role from them. I don't think the Yankees, I'm trying to think, I don't remember the Yankees ever carrying a Rule 5 guy, but I could be wrong.
I'm sure you are. I cannot even, I would have no way of coming up with that off the top of my head. The last two picks, the Phillies took Zach McCambly from the Marlins. He's now the Phillies' number 30 prospect. And the last pick, the White Sox were the only team to take two players in the major league portion of the Rule 5 draft, and they took Alexander Alberto from the Rays. He's now the White Sox number 21 prospect. Anything on the last two guys, McCambly and Alberto?
Yeah, I mean, McCambly is definitely interesting. That's one of the guys I had almost read, you know, the most about kind of going into the draft, is being a, you know, major league ready reliever right now. This might be the best option. Zach McCambly, really, really good slider. Fastball is pretty good too, and he had really good minor league results. He is 26. He's kind of up there in age. But as far as Rule 5 guys go, this makes a ton of sense. And yeah, the Phillies bullpen might be deep at the front. I think they do have spots towards the back to take a chance on a guy like McCambly, who is, the profile is very like Orion Kirkering light. So it's a fun guy for them to take a chance on. Alberto too. So the White Sox did hit on two guys last year with, we talked about Shane Smith, but they also took Mike Vassell, who was a pretty good bullpen piece for them. Yeah. So maybe this year they do it again with Paez and Alexander Alberto. He's only reached high A. So obviously there's not a lot of, experience here, but the dude 6'8", throws 101 with 7 feet of extension on average. And it's got, and he throws it, you know, a lot of those guys throw like sinkers. He's got like a cut action on it, a lot of glove side runs. So it's a very interesting fastball. And he doesn't have like the worst command with it. I mean, it's gotten better. He has improved as long as he's been pitching. You know, pretty sweepy slider, big swing and miss offering as well for him. So yeah, that's, you know, for the last pick in the Rule 5 draft, a guy who's only reached high A. Someone I'm very interested in, hoping he has a good spring training, kind of can turn heads and get a roster spot there, because that bullpen's looking kind of fun at this point, which is surprising. And if they can get like another piece like Alberto to be the real deal there, and they got Prelando Barreau coming back, who I was reminded of last night. So that bullpen could be pretty interesting if they stay healthy and these guys can throw strikes.
All right. Well, that will wrap up the Rule 5 draft. Now we can transition to discussing some of the major league signings out of the relief pool in free agency. We'll go from most recent to the ones that happened the longest ago. They're all
sure, yeah,
pretty grouped together. But we'll start with Colin Holderman, who just signed with the Guardians for 1 year and $1.5 million. We talked about him a couple times already this offseason, as he was designated for assignment and non-tendered by the Pirates, but we assumed he'd latch on with the team considering the success he had across 2022. Three in 2024, during which he pitched to a 3.5 ERA over more than 100 innings with a strikeout rate around 25%. So Holderman, pretty interesting, not going to be a big saves guy or holds guy maybe in Cleveland, but they are very good at producing decent relievers. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were able to not only get Holderman back to the level that we saw from 2022 to 2023, but maybe help him exceed those levels.
Yeah, I like this landing spot for Holderman for multiple reasons. The team, you know, they do a really good job, especially in with their whole pitching development, but the bullpen, they've been able to churn out guys there, and it's obviously a good situation divisional wise, you know. He's and just the whole team aspect right there for Holderman landing in Cleveland's good. Shouldn't be a high leverage guy right away, but you know, for $1.5 million, and he's got some options, that gives the Guardians some depth. And as bad as he was last year, it's not like his stuff fell apart. He still had a 115 stuff plus. Like there's still some upside there. And yeah, I can imagine the Guardians have a way to get him going. So for $1.5 million, that's a really good flyer for the Guardians, a team that's, you know, needed bullpen depth but didn't really need to go out and spend big. This is the type of move that they should be making.
Next, the Cubs signed Hobie Milner to a 1 year, $3.75 million contract. The Southpaw is likely to replace the two veteran lefties that they are likely to lose via free agency, Caleb Thielbar and Drew Pomeran. So while Hobie Milner isn't somebody that's like a difference maker, he is certainly somebody that you like to have as a depth option, especially for a team that pretty much has no left-handed options that are reliable.
Yeah, and I think it might be a little bit of a downgrade from that Thielbar Pomeran's grouping, but sure. You know, someone Craig Counsell's got experience with, so this makes a ton of sense. It's really good against lefties still. Righties can be, you know, hit or miss for him, but yeah, he'll be unless they add another lefty, which, you know, left-handed free agent market's kind of been quiet so far. Those guys usually, especially all those veterans, probably are going to wait till, you know, January, February to find a situation to latch onto. But yeah, mm-hmm. For Milner, I mean, it's a good spot for him. He'll get plenty of opportunities there.
The next one was very surprising, as we had already seen the Braves re-sign Raisel Iglesias to be their closer. So we assumed, okay, they're probably not going to be hunting in the top end of the free agent market. But surprised was I, as they signed Robert Suarez to a 3 year, $45 million contract. Definitely gives that bullpen a lot of depth, and the reports suggest that Iglesias will continue to be the closer. Who knows how long Iglesias is going to be effective? He did sign, how long was his contract?
1 year.
Only 1 year. So this is sort of a hedge your bets. If Iglesias doesn't work out this year, you can quickly transition to Suarez as the closer. And then once Iglesias is gone, you've got Suarez for a couple more years to be the closer. So it makes some sense, but I did not expect any team to sort of get two of the top guys unless it was going to be probably the Mets getting Devin Williams and Edwin Diaz, but the Braves came in surprise and now they've got a pretty decently deep bullpen.
Yeah, the Braves, they've been aggressive in, you know, with their bullpen in the past as well. It was like a couple days ago when the Braves, I think it was actually after Edwin Diaz signed, and there was like a report that the Braves were in on him, and I'm like, what? That doesn't make any sense. And then all of a sudden it's like, the Braves are also interested in Robert Suarez. I'm like, something's weird there. I know the Braves are saying that Iglesias still is the closer, but if they were really in on Edwin Diaz, if they signed Edwin Diaz, like, are you telling me that he was not going to be the closer over Raisel Iglesias this year? Or I don't know. I feel like I'm probably not. I don't know. I don't want to. I think I'm kind of out on Iglesias at this point. Because Suarez, I mean, first of all, we've seen it. It's been the past two seasons for Iglesias. He's gotten off to slow starts. And I think that's part of this, especially with Joe, you know, it sounds like Joe Jimenez is not going to be ready for opening day. And they also confirmed that Reynaldo Lopez will be in the rotation. So they have no right-handed depth there. And if Iglesias does struggle at the beginning of the season like he has the last 2 years, they need someone that can step in right away. So I kind of like Suarez the most here, just like a hunch more than anything, because they are, you know, the team said that Iglesias still has the job. But yeah, I don't think you make this move unless you're either, I mean, at the latest, like Suarez will be the closer in 2027, as long as he, you know, pitches well this year and stays healthy. But yeah, it's like a very expensive depth piece for them that I guess they can, if they can afford it, why not? But yeah, it gives them a really good two-headed monster at the back end. They're both older, but they're both, you know, they're both coming off really good seasons for the most part. So we'll see how things play out there. But yeah, if Suarez is like kind of just not getting drafted or really late in drafts, I think he might be a guy I take a late round flyer on, which is something I never thought I would say like a year ago, but this is where we are now, you know? So yeah, it's interesting to see how this plays out in fantasy drafts, I mean, where their ADP start to go.
That's a good point. I was very surprised to see Suarez sign with the Braves because I assumed he was somebody that would want to.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people were saying. I know that was a lot of the rhetoric, was that he was looking for a closing job. I thought it was going to be Toronto. I was like almost like for sure it's going to be Toronto. And then I guess Toronto didn't really make an offer, or I don't know what happened there. But yeah, the Braves were aggressive.
The combination of the team likely to be competitive over the next few years and the prospect of him taking over once Iglesias is gone maybe sort of swung him, but they did give him a decent amount of money too. $15 million a year is not too shabby. It's less than the $16 million that Iglesias will be earning this year, but it is on the high end of the AAV for relievers. So maybe that was enough to sway Suarez, but if I had to bet before he signed this, I would expect him to sign with a lower market team that allowed him to close than for him to sign with a team as a setup man. But here we are. His priorities are clearly that he wants to win and maybe have a chance at closing. And I think he's got both of those boxes checked with the Braves.
And he gets paid pretty nicely either way too. There's probably a plan in place where it's like, I don't know. We'll see. This is going to be very interesting, especially if Iglesias struggles early. Like that's going to be, it could be a headache too, because, you know, then you have Iglesias like demoted and you know how that goes sometimes with veterans, it's can get weird. So yeah, well, interesting situation to monitor over the next couple months there.
For sure. I'm wearing an A's hat today and that is Only half because they signed, right. That's only half because they signed Mark Leiter Jr. The other half is because I got a haircut and I'm wearing a green shirt. Mark Leiter Jr. though, signed with the A's for 1 year and $3 million. Roster Resource does not know what to do with the A's bullpen right now, but I don't blame them. There's just so many mediocre options. And to be completely honest, Leiter Jr. is one of the most enticing ones there. I mean, I think I like Justin Sterner a little bit more, but Leiter Jr. has more experience, not only in a closer role, but in the majors. So I think they could go any way right now. But Mark Leiter Jr. coming over from the Yankees after being a free agent will sign with the A's.
Yeah, it's interesting because yesterday they had Hogan Harris and Michael Kelly as the co-closers. So now Sterner and Leiter are in there with Hogan Harris as co-closers. Sterner is definitely, that's still the guy that I'm interested in. But yeah, I mean, Leiter Jr. is almost instantly their best strikeout, or, you know, strikeout minus walk guy in that bullpen. Sure. Also a veteran at 30, almost 35 years old. I would not want him to be my closer or the A's closer. I think there's another veteran there that there should be someone else there they can find to give them a year in the closer role. But yeah, I mean, Leiter for now is probably the favorite. Him and Sterner would be the two guys I'd be interested in, but I might draft Sterner late. I don't think I would draft Leiter late. I don't know. It's either both of them. It's very, low reward, medium risk type options. It's not really, I don't know. We'll see what happens there. But I do expect like another veteran to be brought in with some closer experience. I mentioned Kenley Jansen. I don't know. The more I think about that, that could be a horrible situation because of his fly ball tendencies in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I don't know who else it would be.
Right. Either way, as things stand, Leiter Jr. does have his hat in the ring for the closer role in Sacramento. Next, we predicted this one, or I guess everybody was predicting this one. Kyle Finnegan re-signed with the Tigers for 2 years and $19 million. That was expected after he was traded to the Tigers at last year's trade deadline and took his game to another level, one that he hadn't shown previously. 1.50 ERA while pitching to a 35% strikeout rate. Really great numbers there from Finnegan as he upped his splitter usage. So I think everybody was not only hoping that Finnegan went back to the Tigers because he found so much success there, and you can be confident that he's likely to have the same game plan in Detroit, but also because it makes it a lot easier to predict how that bullpen's going to be used, because we saw how AJ Hinch deployed the dynamic duo of Kyle Finnegan and Will Vest down the stretch in 2025. So you can expect those guys to be splitting save opportunities in 2026.
Yeah, I'm just imagine us saying the dynamic duo of Will Vest and Kyle Finnegan like a year ago. But yeah, I mean, Finnegan, obviously, when he got to Detroit, throwing the splitter 25% more, huge difference maker for him. Should expect the same results next year. And yeah, that's, I'm sure AJ Hinch is at least happy that he gets to continue to kind of manipulate his bullpen as he wants to. They were in on, I think, Kenley Jansen, and maybe they were in on a couple of the actual closer types, and that probably would have, you know, hamstrung Hinch and made him, you know, have to use guys and set roles, which he has not wanted to do the past couple of years. So it's a headache from a fantasy standpoint, because probably get a split from Vest and Finnegan again. That being said, I mean, if they're not too, I mean, if the cost isn't that expensive because people are afraid of that split there, I mean, they could each end up with 15 or so saves and pretty good ratios, strikeout numbers as well. So there could be value still invest in Finnegan. I wouldn't completely, you know, not draft them, but they're not, you know, Vest was interesting if they didn't bring in anyone. Now he definitely gets bumped down a little bit. But still, like I said, if, you know, outside of pick 250, 300, it's worth looking at a little bit, you know, just to kick the tires on one of those guys. They're kind of similar for me. I don't even know if I have a favorite, maybe Vest. But I really do like what Finnegan did there last year. It's, I wonder if there's another level he can get to with his fastball splitter combo.
It's definitely a high floor, low ceiling combination from those guys. So I feel like either way you draft one of them, you're holding them all year and they're going to be pretty decent. They're going to give you the value that you want and you're not going to be at risk of dropping them. It's sort of like, depending on where they go in drafts, the other guys that are around there that you're sort of trying to pinpoint whether or not they have a closer role or whether or not they can keep it. Those guys will have much lower floors because if they don't have a closer role, they're going to just be on the waiver wire. But guys like Vess and Finnegan are probably going to be relevant all year long. So we can almost guarantee that that's going to be the case in 2026 with these guys, especially if they pitch as well as they did last year. Next, Gregory Soto signed with the Pirates for 1 year and $7.75 million. It was higher AAV than I expected, but we've talked at length already about the dearth of left-handed pitching options.
The only guy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he was the top one too. So it makes sense that he was able to leverage that to his benefit, but he goes to Pittsburgh with their shallow bullpen. And while I would say he's almost more interesting than Dennis Santana, he hasn't really had that success. He has closed in the past, but I mean, I'm still going to be a Justin Lawrence guy, but I wouldn't count out Gregory Soto being the closer at some point in the season or getting enough saves or some saves. He's going to be the top left-handed option in Pittsburgh all year, and he's probably going to get traded.
Yeah, I mean, that's – well, we'll see what the Pirates do want to compete. Obviously, they want to compete. Every team wants to compete. So they're being kind of aggressive here. But, yeah, if they do find themselves at the deadline, you know, being out of the playoff race, then, yeah, you're going to see Soto and Santana probably both dealt. And then we talk about Colin Holderman. That opens up the door for him. We talked about Holderman a little bit last night. I did a podcast with Bubba and Mike Carter. And yeah, like the Holderman hype is kind of building, especially after his 17 innings last year, but really good innings. You take any reliever out of, you know,
talking about Lawrence
or Lawrence. Yeah. I said Holderman, didn't I?
I was confused for a sec. I was just Colin like, there's Holderman hype.
Colin Holderman, just Lawrence hype. No Colin Holderman hype yet, but kind of, but tempered, but, Justin Lawrence. Yeah. Those two guys, man. Yeah, Lawrence and like Carm Mladzinski are two fun names there. Back to Soto. Kind of reminds me when they brought in like Chapman in 2024, guy with lefty who throws hard with closer experience, who gives them an option in case their top closer either struggles or gets traded. So I don't think he's gonna be their closer right out of the gate, but like, you know, Santana has his concerns. There's some worries there. So if things don't work out, they can move to Soto rather quickly, given his closer experience. If they want to, you know, if they factor that in more than, you know, right-handedness and Justin Lawrence. So, but either way, that kind of, you know, three-headed, you know, Soto, Lawrence, Santana plus Mladzinski factoring in, that's an interesting bullpen that Pirates have. It's not it's not one of the best bullpens in baseball, but it's could be pretty good for them, pretty solid. It's just going to be that, are they going to get enough runs? Are they going to score enough runs in Pittsburgh? That's always the question.
Probably not.
Yeah, no.
All right, we got a few more transactions to get through and then we'll head into our news. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. We are going through the transactions from the past week. We are moving on to Steven Matz, who signed with the Rays for 2 years and $15 million. That's a pretty high AAV for a guy that was a very solid reliever last year, had one of his best seasons in a while, but it does suggest that Matz is likely going to shift back to the rotation or will have a hybrid role where he's pitching in the rotation, pitching in bulk relief, sort of like Ryan Yarbrough from his heyday with the Rays, where he's doing all kinds of stuff. And if it doesn't work out in the rotation, Matz can return to being a dominant lefty reliever in that bullpen. But I mean, he's going to be 35 this year. It's pretty interesting deal, but anytime the Rays do something too that surprises me, I'm always like, okay, they know what they're doing. This is going to be crazy. He's going to be a monster.
He's probably going to be, it's like, it's a guy that now I'm kind of looking at fantasy wise as a starter. He's going to cost you nothing, especially in deeper, if you're in a 16 team league or whatever, like yeah, like keep an eye on Matt's as a star, because they've done this a ton of times. Like, I mean, Jeffrey Springs a few years back, like, signed from the Red Sox. I'm like, what are they doing? Like, mm-hmm. why are they interested in Jeffrey Springs? And then, yeah, turn him into a pretty solid starter. So I feel like that's definitely going to be the plan. If they're not giving him $15 million to be a reliever, but yeah, like you said, solid backup option if he doesn't work out as a starter. But yeah, like you said, the Rays, if they do something, this seems crazy for the Rays, a team that doesn't spend money giving mm-hmm. him $15 million. It's like, okay, they obviously see something. So that, yeah, perks my ears up a little bit.
Certainly. All right. We'll keep our eyes on Steven Matz throughout the year. Next, we had the biggest signing and probably will be the biggest signing of the offseason for relievers. Edwin Diaz has found a new home. He will no longer be pitching for the Mets, and he'll be pitching for the World Series champion, Los Angeles Dodgers, as he signed a record-breaking 3-year, $69 million contract, which breaks the previous record set by Diaz for the highest AAV for a relief pitcher. He'll be earning $23 million a year moving forward. You can imagine how I reacted to this one. Yeah. Not very happy. It's crazy how often the Dodgers have a hole and then they go out and just get the best player at that position. And then people are like, well, why are you mad? Why are you mad? Other teams could have signed him. I'm like, they gave him a record deal.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating, and it definitely, for the people who are like pro salary cap, this is a good more argument. They gave the biggest contract out to a reliever last year too, right? I mean, Tanner Scott.
Yeah, for that season. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, okay, so that didn't work out. So let's just do it again this year. I mean, if it doesn't work out this year, we can do it again next year because we're the Dodgers. It's like, you shouldn't be able to pay Tanner Scott, Edwin Diaz, and Blake Treinen $52.5 million this year because two of them didn't work out as you thought two of them would be the closer. It didn't work out. So now your third option is Edwin Diaz. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It just feels like dumb and just not right. But that's, you know, I'd rather them. I don't think Edwin Diaz like makes or breaks the Dodgers season. If they sign Kyle Tucker, that's a different story. But like, yeah, or trade for Tarek Skubal, I think that would break baseball.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Diaz, we talked about this one for a little while now. It's kind of been, once the Dodgers showed interest, it's like, well, anyone can beat them except the Mets would be the only team that could match like a contract realistically, right? And the Mets didn't even, I know all Mets fans are just like, you know, angry. I get it. You know, you've been watching Edwin Diaz for a long time now. But I just like, I feel like going from Edwin Diaz to Devin Williams is not going to make or break the Mets season. That's not what's going to be the reason why the Mets make or don't make the playoffs.
We talked about that last week.
Yeah. So just, I mean, I know that's not what the Mets fans want to hear, but that's just like, I think that's the truth. And, you know, I was hoping that the $17 million that there are $18 million that they saved, they would, you know, put into like bringing back Alonso. That didn't work out, but, I mean, the one thing with Diaz in LA and kind of, he dealt with it in New York too. It's like, Dave Roberts, even when he does have a closer, he will still go to him in the seventh or eighth inning at times. But I guess Diaz dealt with that in New York.
At first he wasn't that great at dealing with that, but he seemed to last year. It seemed like he locked it in.
Yeah, he was better. And like, yeah, his save totals weren't crazy last year, but mm-hmm. everything else was really good. Still a top two closer for me easily next year. I do think there's a gap between Mason Miller and Edwin Diaz. And then the next group, it looks like in drafts right now, it's like there's been four guys going like back to back to back to back in Diaz, Miller, Andres Munoz, and Yoan Duran. I think I differentiate Diaz and Miller from those other two for now. It's not too far off, but I mean, mm-hmm. I'd prefer the Diaz Miller combo if I'm getting any one of those four that early.
I agree. And I think from a fantasy perspective, it is worth talking about the sort of downside of Edwin Diaz in terms of his landing spot. I don't think he's going to be super diminished in terms of his abilities. But as you mentioned, Dave Roberts likes to mess around a little bit with the bullpen usage. There are plenty of names there that have experience in the ninth inning.
Tanner
especially
Scott's not going Tanner away. Scott. Yeah. Right. He's, so, yeah. I mean, he should pitch better next year. Like he had some bad luck last year. I think he'll be pretty good next year. I think he's going to surprise people.
Mm-hmm. Who knows if Diaz is going to get every save opportunity? Who knows? Yeah. If he's going to land on the IL with Dodgeritis.
That too. Yeah. I mean, outside of that one year he missed, which was, let's be honest, it was a fluke injury. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Diaz has been pretty steady and been available. So yeah, I mean, now in LA, if they want to give him a couple weeks towards the end of the year, and then if Tanner Scott's pitching well, like they probably won't mind, you know, giving Tanner Scott some save chances for a couple weeks. But like you said, like if the Dodgers have, I mean, if they got like two or three lefties coming up in the ninth and like the middle of the order or top of the order in the eighth inning, they might go to Diaz for the eighth and Tanner Scott for the ninth. That
right.
shouldn't surprise anyone. It doesn't hurt Diaz's. I mean, maybe if you're talking about him being the first overall reliever, it kind of hurts Diaz's chances. But he's still going to be really good. This is one of the better landing spots for him, all things considered. Diaz still awesome. Sorry, I can't believe he only got a 3-year deal.
It seems like he prioritized the Dodgers. I mean, obviously he does get the higher AAV here. He does set a record in that regard, but I would be super surprised if his agent or teams told me that he wasn't being offered more than 3 years or higher total value for his contract. It seemed like he prioritized winning, and it's not to the extent of like a Kevin Durant, and you know, I'm as a Bay Area guy, Warriors fan, I benefited from that, but it is like, okay, if you can't beat him, then join him. And that's sort of what he's doing here, where I'm sure there were teams that offered him over $100 million and maybe slightly lower AAV. And maybe he thinks he can pitch so well over the next 3 years, he can go back out
one more
on the
contract.
Market, do it again. Right. And maybe that's smart. Maybe that was sort of strategic on his and his agent's point, but it does seem like he prioritized like that shorter term contract to go play for a team that's been very good.
Yeah. And like only $3 million more from the from the Dodgers than what the Mets were offering. It does kind of make me think that either he didn't want to return to New York for whatever reason, or he felt slighted that they signed Devin Williams. And I think that I think they mentioned that he was never told about Devin Williams signing there or something. And that might've, hurt his feelings or whatever. But yeah, it does seem like the Dodgers were his preferred choice at the end of the day anyway, even if the Mets did match the contract. It's be interesting to see how that works out for him. But yeah, he'll be a free agent again, and that I think 35 years old, which like Robert Suarez is going to be 35 and just got 3 years, 45
exactly.
million.
Yeah.
So yeah, he can get another one more payday before all is said and done.
Right. I think the last point I'll make is from a fantasy perspective, the Dodgers are a team that wins a lot of games, but because they're so good, because they're so strong offensively, they don't have like exceedingly more save opportunities than other competitive teams. So it's not going to be a situation where, Edwin Diaz has to compete with Tanner Scott and these other guys, but is still going to have a 30 save season. I think that also puts a cap on his save opportunities because the Dodgers are going to be blowing out teams by so much. They're going to be winning by so much, and they'll likely take it easy on Edwin Diaz, like we've seen them do with all of their pitchers last season and the past couple of seasons. They're not going to force him to go 2 days in a row or 3 days in a row to lock down a save, not only because they don't have to and because they basically are guaranteed a postseason spot, and they'd rather have them healthy for the postseason than some random game in July. But they also have the tools there. They have the backup options that they're not even forced to turn to one of the top two closers in baseball to lock down a save, because they have another top five, top 10 reliever in baseball in Tanner Scott. That's arguable. But if you're looking at AAV, Tanner Scott's like a top five paid reliever, and they got two of those guys. So they won't really be pressured into sending Diaz out there every day. So I really think the save total is capped. I would be very surprised to see Edwin Diaz surpass like even 35 saves. 30 saves would be surprising too, because he got 28 last year as the Mets' primary closer. I wouldn't see him doing that this next year.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I don't think I would say it's pretty safe to say he's not going to lead the league in saves. The Dodgers, the Dodgers still were up there in save opportunities last year. It's such a, the save opportunity list, leaderboard list is so, like, the Dodgers and Angels have the same number. Diamondbacks are right there too. So, yeah, it's hard to predict, but like you said, there's other, and it's not even just Tanner Scott. I mean, Alex Vesey is coming back. He's really good. They're paying Blake Treinen like he's a closer. If he bounces back, there's another option for them. So, I can't see Diaz breaking. Maybe he gets to 35, but probably I don't see him breaking 40. It's not like he was with Seattle, you know, where they were just running him out there every day.
Right. Yeah, we've seen him have a 50-plus save season. All right. Well, I think that's everything that can be said about Edwin Diaz other than, you know, my disdain for the Dodgers and the whole, like,
worse.
Breaking baseball. It keeps getting – there's still plenty of free agents for them to sign. You never know. I saw with his face, Andrew Friedman mentioned that he doesn't have to do a lot of heavy lifting this offseason. Yeah. And then he goes out and signs a record-breaking contract with one of the best relievers basically of all time. So that's hilarious.
The one spot they needed. That's the
situation we're in.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it was. I mean, that's honestly one of the most frustrating parts about it, too. It's like, okay, it actually makes sense for the Dodgers because it's like, oh, where's the one hole they have right now? Their bullpen sucked last year. They got to bring somebody in, and I didn't expect them to go above and beyond and get the best guy out there. But hey, that's what they've been doing. That's sort of short-sighted by me to think that they wouldn't go out and get the best guy available.
We didn't think they needed Blake Snell last year, and they went out and like, no, we're going to do that.
They did. They barely won the World Series.
And with all that, you're right.
All right. So our last free agent signing was a surprising one as the Padres signed Deyson Acosta. He has not pitched in the major, so it's interesting to see them go and sign him to a major league contract. But this is the second time they've done this already this offseason. Who was the other guy they got?
We talked about him last week.
Oh, Ty Adcock.
Yes.
Was it him? Yeah. It's these guys that you don't have to sign to major league contracts, but they do, which sort of feels weird, especially considering how deep the Padres bullpen is. So these guys are far from guaranteed making the roster, but I guess there's something to be said about making these guys interesting. Acosta was somebody who last year made it to AAA, started out at A-ball and made it all the way up to AAA as a 26-year-old. For the Nationals, he pitched very well at AA, not so much at AAA, and overall in the minors in 2025, Acosta, 2.42 ERA and a 33% strikeout rate. Does not have great control, but the Padres see something in him enough to sign him to a major league deal.
Yeah, just mostly a depth piece that, I mean, they're trying. They're obviously, you know, a little bit hamstrung with spending money right now, so they're just trying to fill out the roster, it feels like. Some they've identified these guys as, I don't know too much about Acosta. We talked about Adcock last time. It sounds like Acosta's kind of got like a, you know, a decent four pitch mix, just the middle relief, long relief option for them. So we'll see if he makes the roster. But yeah, outside of the top like four or five guys in that bullpen, it does kind of open up there now that they've lost Suarez and Adam won't be there for opening day.
All right. Well, that's all the free agent signings. We did have one more transaction. It was a trade and it was a very surprising one and exceedingly surprising for the In the Pen podcast, which last week said, this is probably not going to happen to this team specifically. Jose A. Ferrer was traded by the Nationals to the Mariners in exchange for top catching prospect Harry Ford and minor league pitcher Isaac Lyon. So the Nationals deal there, the pitcher that we thought was going to be their closer on opening day, who was their closer in the second half, to the Mariners, where he is likely to not have closing opportunities with the presence of not only Andrés Muñoz, but also Matt Brash. Great situation though for Ferrer in Seattle. I mean, not only is it a great park with a pretty decent defense, but he's got a really good bullpen there. Unfortunately, this destroys his fantasy value. We were both very excited about Ferrer for 2026. And now it's like, okay, you can almost cross them off your boards and save only leagues.
Save only, yeah. Holds leagues, he definitely becomes interesting there.
Right.
Because it is going to be a better situation for him. A slight boost from the ballpark, I guess, as well. But mostly big time ground ball pitcher is going to have a better, I mean, the Nationals infield defense last year is like I think it was the worst in baseball. I mean, Abrams is terrible at short.
Yeah, makes sense.
And they had Luis Garcia at second, who's terrible. So yeah, going from that to, I don't know who the second baseman will be necessarily in Seattle, right. But you know, Crawford's definitely an upgrade at short.
And the pitching development is great in Seattle.
Yeah, that's the thing too. And it's like, who are we? Kyle Finnegan, we'll just take him for example. I mean, guy who did not throw, they just were like, you know, they've been kind of with all of their relievers and even Robert Garcia too there. It's like, you know, they really want you to throw your fastball like 75% of the time. And it's like, that's just, I mean, that's not what other teams are doing right now, man.
No.
that's not what works in today's game. And so like Ferrer, a guy who does have a really good sinker fastball, he throws 98 with a ton of sink, great pitch, throws it 75% of the time, but like his changeup could be pretty good too. I mean, the slider maybe can develop as well. So if one of those secondaries even takes a bit of a step forward and he can throw it more often, yeah, that's going to be a huge difference maker for him. That bullpen is going to be really fun. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It is
Spire going to Brash and Munoz. That's, and yeah, I mean, we saw a Pizarro in the second half, and
I mean, even Vargas is interesting.
And Vargas throws 99 plus. Yeah.
And who knows who they'll uncover this year.
Yeah, I know that pitching staff from, you know, bullpen to rotation, like, you know, those 13 guys are going to have in that pitching staff might be the best in the AL. So it's a really fun rotation there and bullpen. Right. Ferrer, yeah, opens up a huge question mark in Washington now, because I was excited for him as a sleeper pick.
Mm-hmm.
Now is it Clayton Beter time, or I don't know. They haven't really been linked. I'm surprised they haven't been linked to any, like even like a Kenley Jansen, like not even like a, or even Pete Fairbanks wouldn't be like a
sure
total, you know, it wouldn't be crazy for them to be interested there. So yeah, I do wonder what the plan is. I got to imagine they're going to bring in someone, even if it's like a cheap, like a Kirby Yates, Paul Sewald, someone with some closing experience. Just they need some veteran there. But for now, it does have me moving, you know, Clayton Beter up, just because there is upside there and the risk for where he's being drafted at this point is not considerable. So, you know, if we can get Clayton Beter to throw, you know, if we can get that walk rate down closer to 10%, then he could be a really, really big steal. But yeah, I still got to imagine that they bring in a veteran. I don't know who it's going to be, but someone.
Right. You mentioned the Nationals not really getting the most out of Ferrer, and he was somebody who was really unlucky the past couple of years, especially considering how good his stuff was, but just between the ERA estimators and his ERA. I expected with the new president of baseball operations, Paul Toboni, in Washington, he is like the youngest Pobo out there right now. I expected him to see the value in Ferrer, and maybe he did, and that's why he traded him.
He got a pretty good return. Yeah.
Not mad about it. But yeah, you do start to question, like, okay, how does he see the Nationals competitive window? Because it does feel like you've got these guys coming up from the minors now, all the guys from the Juan Soto trade years back. Yeah. You got, you know, Abrams around, Woods around.
They're looking Dylan to trade Cruz. Those guys, though. It's like they're trying to move Abrams and Gore again.
Right. They're going to trade Mackenzie Gore. Right.
Does sound like it. Yeah. It does feel like maybe they're hoping to compete more towards the end of that James Wood window, like when he's, you know, years 4 and 5 for him, maybe. And yeah,
you'd think it would be that window would be opening up now, but it sounds like they're going to close it and wait a couple more years.
Yeah, I don't know what ownership's telling them, like as far as what they can spend. I mean, they've obviously had some bad contracts in the past, but like I thought that they could, if they wanted to, make like, you know, 2 or 3 moves to kind of put them in a position at least to compete for a wild card spot this year. Sure. But yeah, it does seem like they're not in any rush to do that. And
that bullpen just looks like It's just not even close to being ready to compete.
No, a lot of name, and they didn't take. Oh yeah, they did. They took McGarry. So yeah, they took a flyer on a Rule 5 guy there. But yeah, it's like, yeah, I thought they could have been a little bit more aggressive, but it does seem like, and especially with a lot of the personnel decisions they made, and they've added a lot of like the really good staff there.
Yeah,
and they're gonna turn it around, but it does seem like they're playing the long game there.
Sure.
And yeah, that might ultimately be the best choice for them. But yeah, I did think that there was a window, there was a way for them to kind of make things work so that they could compete this year and next year. But yeah, we'll see what they do.
The staff changes sort of give me hope for Beater though, because he was somebody that just has such good stuff. He strikes out a lot of guys. He just can't throw strikes, and maybe bringing in that different staff and a different eye, different perspective on somebody like that will help him reach another level. And on top of that, with the opportunity now presented in that ninth inning, especially if they don't bring in a veteran that's clearly the closer, Beater is somebody that's going to be a pretty wide awake sleeper if people are paying attention.
Yeah, I think. And yeah, again, like Beater threw 55% fastballs last year. His slider, he was able to command pretty well, too. I mean, his fastball command is what's an issue for him. So, yeah, I think with the new pitching development staff there, it should. And there's other guys. I mean, like Orlando Roboto throws 99 plus. They have someone else there. They have some interesting pieces. If they get the right development, they could break out there.
All right, so we'll be keeping an eye on that Nationals bullpen, see what the new front office can do with the opportunity presented in the ninth inning. We're heading into talking about some news and injuries and rumors from the past week. I will just say we are going to go a little bit long in this one. I mean, it's like a weekly thing now. It doesn't even matter how many players we put on here. We are going to talk an hour about three guys.
The stove is hot. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. We should appreciate it now before all the news starts running out. But even still, I mean, we could put five guys on a list and talk about them for 5 hours.
That's true.
We will continue to move through this. In terms of injuries, sounds like AJ Minter will probably not be ready for opening day, which means the Mets desperately need some bullpen help, especially after missing out on getting Edwin Diaz to return. But they are relying on some unreliable names right now. Yeah, Adbert Ausley. Just looking at this on roster resources, it's not great. Outside of Devin Williams, it's like Minter, Ausley, Brooks Raley, Huascar Brazoban, Austin Warren, Richard Lovelady, Cooper Criswell, and even Reed Garrett and Daniel Nunez are going to be injured. So
they're going to be out for most of the year. Yeah.
So right. They're going to need like three guys at least.
I don't know where, I don't know what the plan is there. And that's where I'd be upset with the Mets. It's not that you didn't bring back Edwin Diaz. It's just like, what is that? Do we have a plan for this bullpen? Because I'm sure they do. But like right now, even like Brazoban, like I don't even know if he's someone who's really a guy I want in the major league level.
He's like 35 too.
Yeah. Warren Lovelady. It's
37.
That's going to be the issue. I think Devin Williams will pitch fine. I don't know if they're going to be able to get the ball to him in a safe situation though. That's my biggest concern with Devin Williams right now, is just like how many save chances will he get with that bullpen? I mean, there's a lot of, obviously there's holes all over that team right now. If I was a Mets fan, I guess I can't say because I'm not a Mets fan, but as a Red Sox fan, there's a lot of Red Sox fans panicking right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm not. And as a Mets fan, I don't think I would panic yet. I mean, it's a little bit different. Losing Diaz and Alonso, I get that. But there are people who are way smarter than us making decisions in that front office. And they'll spend money. Yeah. I know, right? The keyboard warriors. But they're gonna spend money. They're gonna make moves. They're gonna be a competitive team. So the bullpen, though, I think there's a lot of,
they're gonna have to figure something out.
There's still guys out there. They could throw money at Tyler Rogers and Brad Keller, and all of a sudden it looks a lot different. So yeah, we'll see.
All right, moving into some news and rumors. We got some positive news for us bullpen guys in San Diego. There were lots of questions swirling around the top relievers in that bullpen and whether or not the Padres would try to transition them to the rotation. But we have got confirmation. Both Mason Miller and Adrian Morejon will remain in the Padres bullpen. I also saw David Morgan on that list as well. So the Padres will not be transitioning any relievers to the rotation, which is good for us, not only because it makes it easier to determine how that bullpen's going to shake out, but also gives us more fun guys to talk about throughout the year.
I saw the Morgan thing and I'm like, where did that come from? Because he's never started a game. I mean, he started two games technically last year as an opener, but in the minors, he never started a game. And I don't, So that was kind of a surprising one. I mean,
does he have like a, he does have a deep pitch mix. He's a four pitch mix.
Yeah. And, he does spread them out. Seth Lugo-ish kind of.
Yeah.
Sure. But yeah, I love that they're all going to be back in the bullpen. So yeah, Mason Miller is easily my number one RP for next year. Just stay healthy, man. That's all we need. As long as he's healthy, he's going to be a monster. That's such a good situation for him. If those guys can get the ball to him and give him easy save chances. Yeah, it's really, really good situation for him. And Morejon, look at that rotation right now. That's really gross. Outside of Pivetta and Musgrove are fine, obviously, but drops off a cliff there. So I thought Morejon could get a chance to start, could stretch out. But yeah, I'm not going to complain about him being back in the bullpen.
Sure. There are rumors swirling around the Brewers bullpen as both Trevor Megill and Nick Mears appear to be on the trade block with both New York teams, the Mets and the Yankees, involved. Some MLB insiders are saying that Megill is likely to be moved, but that really depends on which MLB insiders you are listening to. I think the biggest takeaway from this is I continue to gain more confidence in suggesting that Abner Ribe is going to be the closer for the Brewers.
I know. If you look at it, you know, I think someone said that either Peralta or Megill will get moved. I think, I don't know who it was, Joel Sherman or someone said that Megill is likely to be moved. He's projected to make $4.2 million this year, which for the Brewers might be too much. For every other team, I mean, that should be, they could probably get a really good return, especially now that we've seen most of the closer, you know, situation and free agency kind of be taken care of. I think once Fairbanks signs, once he's out of play, I think then we see Megill's market eat up a little bit.
The Mets make a lot of sense.
They do.
He wouldn't be the closer, and it would be very, humorous to see him back right. With Devin Williams again, dynamic again.
I would imagine he would set up Devin Williams there,
sure,
but at least gives them an option of a guy who could close if
they
needed.
Need anybody,
just bodies. And I'm not sure what the return would be. I mean, Toronto is another team that makes sense. I wonder if Toronto were to add a guy like Megill, does he overtake Hoffman? I kind of feel like he would, or at least the Blue Jays would want him to. The way they've talked about, they want them wanting Hoffman to kind of be more of a fireman, high leverage guy for them. Mm-hmm. So that could be a guy. I mean, the Blue Jays have been linked to every reliever. So are they actually in on these guys, or are they just kind of linked? Right. Because I don't know if they've actually made any offers. They've just been rumored to be interested in everyone. So, they might just be kind of playing around the market right now.
Megill's really just a fit for any team at this moment, especially that are trying to be competitive. I mean, he's got multiple years of control. So even a team that isn't competing right now or is looking to compete in the next couple of years, it makes sense. Like the Nationals aren't going to go do it, but that wouldn't surprise me. It would make sense. I mean, he makes sense for any team right now.
Yeah, and the Mets are also kind of fun because his brother's there as well.
That would be cool.
They could, you know, they could sign both Rogers brothers, bring in Trevor Megill. You got two sets of brothers. The vibes would be really good. I mean, that should solve everything for Mets fans right there.
Right.
But yeah, the Yankees would be a little bit weird because he's definitely had some beef with them in the past. So I wonder if that's something, how much that really plays into these types of things. But I'm surprised the Yankees haven't been that involved. I feel like they in the relief market, they definitely need to add somebody. probably not a closer. I think Bednar's safe there, but
right. It's more like depth they need depth,
yeah, setup sure. guy. It's, I mean, Duvall and Cruz as your top setup guys is kind of risky.
Not terrible, yeah. But it definitely risky.
Yeah. Reward risk right there. Yeah.
Right. Right. The White Sox appear to be interested in Pete Fairbanks. They join a whole list of teams that are interested in Fairbanks services, including the Diamondbacks, Marlins, and Blue Jays. We had previously reported that the Tigers and Dodgers were interested, but after they signed Finnegan and Diaz respectively, they probably take their hats out of the ring. But seems like a lot of teams are interested in Fairbanks, and the fact that all of these teams would probably plug him right into the closer role is
yes
a good reason to continue to draft Pete Fairbanks.
Yeah, I think he's, I mean, it could, we never know, this mystery team could emerge, but it does seem like, you know, the way the market is working for Fairbanks right now, he will be the he'll be closing out next year. And we kind of thought that with Robert Suarez until like 2 days ago when the Braves kind of entered the mix, but I think Fairbanks will be he's got to be the next guy to sign somewhere. I just don't know. You know, I've been thinking the Marlins for a while, but now that the Blue Jays have, again, I don't know if the Blue Jays are real. I don't know if they're like really considering adding a closer because they haven't necessarily made an offer yet. They've just been interested. So that could open the door for the White Sox would be weird again. That's another, you know, talk about his Raynaud syndrome. Like that's a place that's going to be cold in April to pitch in Chicago. So probably not the best situation for him. Maybe it just ends up being Arizona by default. They need a closer. The only thing is I'm not really sure where the Diamondbacks are. Like, are they looking, like, are they serious about competing this year? They kind of sold everyone at the deadline last year. I guess they still have Corbin Carroll and, you know, Ketel Marte for now, but if they move on from Marte, yeah, it feels like they're headed for a rebuild. So, I don't know. That's why it's the Marlins or Blue Jays for me for Fairbanks. I think that makes the most sense.
The Angels and Tigers have shown interest in Kenley Jansen, but that was prior to the Tigers signing Kyle Finnegan. So it seems most likely that Jansen is going to return to the Angels, though that remains up in the air. I wouldn't be surprised if he waits out the offseason to find the perfect spot where he can just close. But the Angels make a lot of sense for Kenley Jansen right now.
Yeah, it looks like, I mean,
a lot of sense.
There might be a couple teams. I mean, we're getting to the point like where we say Pete Fairbanks is like the last remaining definite closer. There's multiple. I mean, we could probably list off eight teams right now that need a closer. So Jansen should have a pretty good market. So it's kind of smart of him to just kind of wait this thing out and see what teams, you know, become, you know, what teams are really looking for closer help. I feel like he's going to probably end up on the West Coast, but you know, I mean, like we talked about, the Nationals could use a guy for a year. I don't know if the Rangers could afford him, but like the Rangers definitely need a closer. The A's, the Angels. Yeah. There's, you know,
all kinds of teams.
Giants, you know, you said. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities there potentially. Diamondbacks. So Twins, maybe, I don't know. White Sox, maybe, I don't know.
Anybody.
So there's a bunch of teams that need a 1 year or need a stopgap closer. So yeah. Good news for Kenley Jansen, who should, and if you're drafting him, he's probably at a discount because there's probably a little bit of concern that he doesn't get a closer role, but I'm fairly certain he will be closing somewhere. He wants to get 500 saves. That definitely is like the number one priority for him. So yeah, he'll close somewhere.
The Blue Jays appear to be interested in both Brad Keller and Luke Weaver. It sounds like the Yankees and Tigers are also in on Keller. That does beg the question of what Keller's role will be. And while it's unclear whether or not he'll be a closer, I think because these are the teams that are interested in him, that he's likely not going to be transitioned back to the rotation. We can be pretty confident that he's going to remain in the bullpen.
Yeah, I don't know why we're talking about him moving into the rotation. There's been a couple teams that have been like mentioning it and wanting him as a starter. It's like that. It's not like he was a great start. I don't know. I've never seen the Brad Keller starter. You know, I've never been interested in him as a starter. So I don't know why teams, he's not going to throw 97 out of the rotation next year. Right. Like he's going to be back down to throw a 94 and being just like maybe a decent fifth starter at best.
But do you think he'd close for the Blue Jays?
No. I think they'd still go with Hoffman. I mean, they at least it gives them some sort of, you know, secondary option if Hoffman does struggle right out of the gate. But they still have, you know, Jimmy Garcia is still a guy with closer experience who pitched well last year when he was healthy. You know, Louis Varland has big time stuff. There's still options there. But Keller, they definitely, I mean, they're interested in every reliever. Are they going to actually offer a contract to one of these guys? That's going to cost them a little bit of money. They've been aggressive spending money, so I don't see why they wouldn't. I don't think Weaver maybe would give Hoffman a run for his money as far as being the closer. Cause he does have a little experience there. I don't know though. I feel like both those guys would be more.
The Yankees should just bring him back, to be honest, instead of getting Weaver. Keller.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I'm a little surprised. I don't even know if they've been like linked to Weaver or like mentioned. Maybe it's just kind of, we're just assuming that there's some interest there with the Yankees and Weaver, but yeah, there hasn't been a lot of smoke as far as,
I mean, returning. The fans like surprisingly never turned against Weaver.
I know.
Which is something they do with like every.
he had a little bit of a rough year last year too.
They didn't care. They didn't care because Devin Williams was there. He was public enemy number one.
Scapegoat. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it would make sense for Weaver to return. But yeah, I think we talked about it a little bit last night. Like for the Giants, not really. Giants have been linked to a lot of teams, but I feel like Luke Weaver would be a pretty good closer for them. Just like it seems like a good
anybody.
Fit all around. There's yeah, just, I mean, there's anyone, but like I feel like that fits for Weaver, kind of like the chill, laid back dude going out to the West Coast and pretty good stadium, good defense behind him. That's a good fit for Luke Weaver. I feel like that should be a team. And it wouldn't cost the Giants too much either.
Yeah. The Red Sox are interested in Sir Anthony Dominguez. They're trying to add depth to their bullpen, which is headed by Aroldis Chapman, who they're likely looking to replace after 2026 for the 2027 season. But, I mean, what happened to the reports of the Red Sox looking to build a super bullpen? Because right now it's not looking very super.
Yeah, that's the one thing I think that is annoying as a Red Sox fan is that they are linked to everyone, but I don't know if that's, again, it's similar to like the Blue Jays being linked to every reliever, but are they actually like willing to make offers to these guys? And like the Red Sox have been linked to everyone and you know, they haven't signed anyone yet. So I don't know why they put out so much smoke or where the smoke's coming from with all these Red Sox rumors. But yeah, that super bullpen thing, they wanted to sign Devin Williams and like Edwin Diaz or Devin Williams and Luke Weaver or something like that. It's like, obviously that was never really a plan. I don't know what the point of like putting that out there was. Sir Anthony Dominguez would be fine with it. You know, there's still some upside there. Big strikeout numbers of the guys, of the free agents lefty. I think he had the highest strikeout rate last year. I don't love him as being a potential closer for 2027. If that was the plan, if they wanted to give him a 2-year deal, that would be kind of shaky for me. I was hoping that they would be in the market for one of the bigger names, but at this point, if they're not going to bring in Luke Weaver or Brad Keller, I think Dominguez might be the next best option for them as far as right-handed bullpen help goes.
Sure. The Giants are interested in Michael Kopech. Makes sense for them, considering they have such a wide-open bullpen and they have pretty good pitching development. Yeah. But for Kopech, it's not really about how good he is. It's just about staying healthy, which is something he struggled with throughout his career. We saw him sort of take off in 2024, but then he struggled last year with the Dodgers to even be on the mound, just pitched in 11 total innings. Yeah, he was not. I mean, 2.45 ERA, but it was a 5.76 xFIP. So hopefully Kopech can find a place where he's given that opportunity and can find some health in 2026, especially if he's pitching for the Giants.
Yeah, that's a sneaky fit. I mean, especially if they don't make like another big bullpen move, which would, for Giants fans, would probably be, you know, disheartening. But if Kopech ends up being like the only guy they add there, I'm kind of buying back in, again, assuming he's healthy. And there was big time hype on him coming into last year. just couldn't stay healthy. I mean, we saw him do the closer thing in 2024, kind of hit or miss, but I feel like once he got to LA, he settled down a little bit and was more consistent. So yeah, I think if you have a healthy Michael Kopech, there's certainly a closer there. So yeah, someone to keep an eye on, and especially if they have San Francisco, if he lands there before they sign anyone else, like, yeah, I would start throwing some late round darts at Michael Kopech just to see how things work out.
The Mets are interested in a Tyler Rogers reunion. Makes total sense considering the amount of injury and performance risk they have in their bullpen right now. Getting somebody like Rogers, who is not only reliable in terms of his performance, but also his ability to stay on the field. I mean, he's just like a workhorse in terms of reliever. So, I mean, that's almost a perfect fit. He's a great fit for any bullpen, but for one like this, where you're like, okay, who even is Austin Warren, who, like, how many innings is Richard Lovelady going to produce? Makes sense for them to go for somebody that's reliable in terms of his ability to pitch a lot of innings.
Yeah, it's someone into, like, we talked about him a little bit last night with Bubba, and, like, you know, he's a Giants fan as well. Like, if they brought back Tyler Rogers, if you have Tyler Rogers and between Tyler Rogers and
team are you talking about?
The Giants right now.
Ryan Walker,
yeah. Between Rogers and Ryan Walker, I think Rogers would be the closer there,
I don't know.
You don't know.
They never used him in that role.
They never really. That's not necessarily true. They did a little bit like a while ago. But with Walker there.
Yeah. Well, 2021.
Yeah.
He had 13 saves. Yeah. I mean,
I mean, Rogers is obviously not your prototypical closer, but he is a guy who, like you said, he's always available. I mean, he can pitch three, 4 days in a row.
Right. Which is why I sort of like him more as a setup guy, because you know, he can get into every single game. You want him pitching when ideally, the game's paused. If you're restricting him to the ninth, then
I do think the Mets is being like the, even if he's the primary setup guy to Devin Williams, that makes a lot more sense. If they bring him back with AJ Minter, if he's healthy, Brooks Raley, and then add like one more righty to that mix, like, okay, then like the Mets bullpen's definitely it's fine. It's not ideal maybe, but it's a lot better than what it is now. So that should be the priority for the Mets for their bullpen goes. I think the Rogers market, especially once like Fairbanks signs, I think Rogers market will be pretty intense. I think there'll be a lot of teams interested in him as a setup guy. So
I wonder if teams will look at him as a closer. I mean,
there could be.
Don't see him as that, but that's it will be interesting. I just think that role sort of limits his right.
Yeah. I think it comes down to if he is interested in closing, like there's probably a team or two out there who does need a closer who would be willing to bring him in. So, but he can be such a good setup guy for like a winning team right now. I feel like that makes the most sense ultimately. Mm-hmm.
The Diamondbacks are interested in Pierce Johnson. Reports are saying that he wouldn't be the team's closer, but there's really not many great options there. It's like, all right, if you can get over the Kevin Ginkle hump, I think Pierce Johnson would be, he'd be the best reliever there. But if he does join the Diamondbacks, and it seems like both sides are interested, he would definitely have his hat in the ring to close games in Arizona.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that from a fantasy standpoint. It's definitely a closer, though, who's in it's not the Rockies situation. So it's someone you got to pay attention to in some regard. Mixed results from him as a closer in the past. And in Atlanta last year, too, it was he had a chance to close for a little bit when Iglesias did lose his job. And whenever that was, April or May or June, and that didn't go well. So it's probably better. Yeah, I feel a little safer than Kevin Ginkle. Ultimately I would like to see them either just, have some fun with it and try Dre Jamison if he's healthy, or I don't know. There's really not a lot of options outside of Pete Fairbanks if they don't get him.
All right. Looks like the Twins are looking to add multiple bullpen arms, which makes sense considering their bullpen might be, I mean, if I had to rank all the bullpens, I think they'd be at number 30 and like pretty easily. Like, I don't even have to think about it. I don't even have to look at all the other bullpens. It's just the names that are there are not exciting and not a lot of ceiling, not a lot of floor. It's a lot of unknown names, yeah. But they do have room to bring in a closer, and really anybody could be a closer for that team. I mean, you put an interesting name on here and it's like, okay, yeah, I don't think he's closing for any other team, but for the Twins right now, I mean, it would make sense.
Yeah. I mean, anyone I think with a pulse and closer experience right now could be their closer. So yeah, I feel, and they're not going to spend a lot of money on whatever it is. I mean, they're definitely going to, the way that they're not trading Joe Ryan, they're not trading Pablo Lopez. So there's going to be, you look at their AAA rotation right now, that whole AAA rotation that they have could probably be a better bullpen than what their bullpen is right now. So some of those stars will end up being like
Nick Abel.
Yeah. Abel, Taj Bradley, Festa. Yeah. Some of those starters will end up being in the bullpen, and maybe one of them kind of steps up into being a closer. I mean, I could easily see it from any of those guys, like Abel, Bradley, Festa. Right. But yeah, I'm sure they're going to add some, you know, I don't know why Jordan Romano keeps coming to mind. He just feels like a guy who makes sense for the Twins.
When I read that, I was like, I could see that. I see him like feels, in a Twins uniform.
Right. It's just something about it feels right. I don't know. He's Canadian. It's close to Canada. I don't know. But something makes sense with Romano and the Twins, and, you know, probably cost $4 or $5 million at most for Romano for a year. A guy who we talked about last week had a lot of bad luck. Could be a fun guy for them to kind of turn around and flip at the deadline. They'll bring in a veteran, but definitely keep an eye out for those starters that will end up in the bullpen. There could be some interesting names there.
Speaking of Canada, the Blue Jays got rid of Yariel Rodriguez. Surprisingly, they jettisoned him out. They outrighted him right off the roster, which means they are still on tack to pay the $17 million that remains on his contract. But that does mean any team can sign him now as he's joined the free agent pool. Surprising because he pitched very well last year. I mean, the underlying numbers don't suggest that it was completely deserved, but still a 3.08 ERA. 22% strikeout rate. Like I said, underlying metrics aren't really there. 11% strikeout minus walk rate, 4.60 xFIP. But he was a guy, or is a guy, that can pitch in multiple roles. We saw him as a setup man for the Blue Jays last year, but he's been a starter in the past, like he was for them in 2024. He was a great starter in NPB and for Cuba's national team in the WBC few years ago. So still somebody that I think has some potential. It's not like he's old either. He's going to be 29 this next year. So if any team sees potential in him, they could bring him on board. I guess it makes sense considering how much money he was due, but the fact that they still have to pay him, it's like, okay, well, you might as well keep him around or try to trade him, but they just got rid of him. And I don't know if that says more about Rodriguez or about the depth of the Blue Jays pitching staff.
I think it's partially a depth thing. Like, I think he was the move when they brought in Cody Ponce. I don't know what his role should be. Yariel Rodriguez moving forward, like he was better out of the bullpen. He doesn't have like a true elite offering. I guess the slider is pretty good. The fastball is not good though. That's the issue. It's something he kind of has to hide. So I guess a bullpen role probably makes the most sense. Maybe he is best in like a swing role where he can, that's kind of where he was the first year. I don't know, but it is given the money that he was still owed, it is surprising, but ultimately, yeah, when I look at the Blue Jays bullpen and the roster, the pitching staff they have, like he isn't one of their best, you know, top 12, 13 arms. So, but yeah, that said, I guess I thought they might try to trade him, but yeah, that money, I don't know if anyone wanted to bring on that money for what he's bringing them, you know, on the field.
Makes sense. I'm sure somebody will pick him up.
He'll get a chance
as a depth option somewhere.
Yeah.
Lastly, we'll talk about a pretty unknown name, Jimmy Herget. He's had some success in the past. I'm pretty sure it was with the Angels. And then he actually was surprisingly quietly good for the Rockies this past year, 2.48 ERA, 9 holds. He had a 23% strikeout rate, but it sounds like the Rockies are going to transition him into the rotation. He's going to attempt to be a starter in Coors. And this is sort of news here, right? Good luck. It is sort of news here because Herget was likely to at least have his name in the running to be the closer in competition with guys like Victor Vodnik and Seth Halverson. Yeah. But looks like now we can take his name out of the running.
Yeah. Now it's Vodnik and Halverson, and maybe RJ Petit gets in there as well. Sure. Jaden Hill. I mean, there's a lot of names.
They got some names.
They got names. And I will say that the Rockies are doing some interesting things as far as their development staff goes. They're adding some good, you know, smart baseball people.
It's the new Pobo. It's the new Pobo. Joe Hill.
Yeah, it's whether it's related to him or not, but they are getting some good people there that can hopefully turn things around for that pitching development staff, because it's got to be frustrating, but it's also got to be a fun challenge if you're, if you're one of those guys in a role where you're, in pitching development, because if you can do it there, then you can do it pretty much. I mean, you're going to get all sorts of offers and job opportunities, because that's the one place where, it just hasn't been figured out yet. So
I think the either the GM or the assistant GM they just got was from the Dodgers. So
some teams
are interested.
What's his name? Fields or from the Dodgers. Yeah. So there's a lot of it's a fun challenge. I like you said, that bullpen has names and guys who throw. I mean, almost everyone in that bullpen throws like 97 plus. So there's stuff to work with. They can just mold it and get the best out of it. We'll see. I'm not interested in any closer or any reliever at this point, but there's definitely some interesting arms there for sure.
All right. Well, that wraps up all the news, and to be honest, it's going to wrap up the podcast. We've got 90 minutes on free agent signings, Rule 5 draft, and rumors from the winter meetings. Which I mean, expected from us, but to get through the next dozen guys we wanted to talk about in terms of swing and miss sleepers would probably take us another hour, but we will definitely talk about that in the next podcast, which right now is lining up to come out in the new year. Stay tuned though to the Pitcherless Podcast Network and to the In the Pen Twitter account, or, all over the place. You'll definitely see that next podcast coming out in the next couple of weeks or so. But I think that's going to do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your socials and anything else you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me on socials at I Am Rick Graham. Nothing imminent coming out on my end. Starting to get into deeper, save plus holds, closer reports for 2026. So they'll all be part of the draft guide that we're hoping to have out for you by February at the latest. Looking forward to putting that all together.
All right. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. I've mentioned multiple times already that I'm going to be doing some form of starting pitching work this off season, and hopefully maybe reviving the First Pitch podcast a couple times a week. So still pushing towards that. And I know last off season, I talked the whole off season about doing a top 100, and then it never came out. Don't hold me to it, but it's definitely top of my list right now. So keep an eye out for that kind of stuff coming out over the next few weeks throughout the holidays. But if we don't talk to you before then, have a happy holidays. We got Hanukkah coming up this weekend and Christmas the following weekend. So should be a very jolly time up until we talk to you again on the next episode of the In the Pen podcast. This will do it for episode number 144. Talk to you all in a few weeks.